Hi, I'm Lauren Gilger, and this is the Friday Newscap Podcast. Each Friday, we review the biggest stories of the week with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here is this week's episode.
The idea that I would want the life of any member of law enforcement put in danger is wrong, it's offensive, and it is an outright lie.
Where you have elected Democrat officials across the country who are encouraging left-wing agitators and crazy people to go out and unlawfully obstruct lawful immigration enforcement.
I will not vote for the Department of Homeland Security budget this week because that agency needs an overhaul from the top down and the bottom up.
Firmly believe in everyone's First Amendment rights to express their ideas, their thoughts. But we do want our overall guiding value is safety. We want everyone to be safe. And when people take the road, it can become very dangerous.
I can go red or blue. I believe across the board, and if someone makes a compelling argument, I'll build an issue coalition around it, and I'll whip the votes myself, but I will get things passed. We will get things done.
All right. And this morning I am joined by Matt Benson of Veritas. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Sam Richard of Consilium Consulting. Good morning. Thank you for coming in.
Great to be here.
All right. So let's start with Democratic Attorney General Chris Mayes, who has found herself in some hot water this week after an interview with 12 News' Bram Resnick, in which she talked about how, as we're all kind of anticipating an ICE crackdown here in Phoenix, our state's gun culture could really make it more, I think, combustible was the word she used. She cited Arizona's stand your ground laws. And now the whole thing has really blown up with Republicans calling for her resignation, lots of law enforcement organizations speaking out against these comments, and now even Governor Katie Hobbs saying she should retract the comments. Sam, I'm going to let you go first on this one. A lot of Democrats are coming to Mays' defense here, but not the Democratic governor. Do you think she's right?
You know, I think that it is the first thing that we should do is consider what's happening in the frame of the moment, right? And it is an even number year. It is an election year. So I think some of the immediate reaction from the Republican-led legislature and the effort in the state Senate yesterday to force her resignation, I think, can be seen a little bit through those guidelines. I do think that the governor is correct in saying that we're at a moment now where we need strength of character to lead the day, and the temperature needs to be turned down across the board. All of that being said, I think that what Attorney General Mayes is doing is reflecting a lot of concern broadly from people across the spectrum that all of the actions that happened so far and to date have happened not in states with concealed carry in there, and, you know, a really kind of mix of history. We have people who have brought automatic weapons to protests here in Arizona in the recent past. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, there was an effort to kind of highlight that with the temperature high, we're not a great place to have Minnesota-style ICE activity. And I think that was something that was worth bringing up. I think that maybe in retrospect, maybe Attorney General Mayes would have done things a little bit differently. But I don't think that anything that she brought up was factually incorrect.
What's your take here, Matt?
Well, I think it would have been possible for the Attorney General to reference her concerns about ICE activities without sort of musing about that this may lead to law enforcement agents getting shot, which is, you know, what she did. And what, I mean, never mind the reaction of Republican legislators, if you want to consider that political, fine. But the Attorney General's own law enforcement liaison resigned following her comments, you know, reportedly in protest. And her comments drew condemnation from, you know, the Arizona Police Association and, you know, law enforcement groups across the board, who were saying our officers, as well as the Attorney General's own agents at different times, they don't always wear uniforms. Sometimes they are plain clothes. Sometimes, depending on the circumstance, they are wearing a mask. And so for the Attorney General, for the state's top law enforcement to be kind of musing about, you know, this may lead to officers getting shot, it's irresponsible, and it's surprising from an elected official as savvy as she is. And you saw that, and it was reflected in the governor, the Democratic governor, herself saying she needs to retract those comments.
Mm. I want to ask about the not the political context, but the national context around this as well, because we're, as you're referencing, like, we're watching what's happening in Minneapolis and, you know, shooting deaths by federal officers of U.S. citizens and kind of the outrage following that. One of those U.S. citizens was carrying a gun that seems to have played a role in that. I mean, in light of that, let's talk about what you said about law enforcement, Matt, because lots of local law enforcement agencies across the state have been releasing statements this week saying, you know, if ICE does come to Phoenix, we will not escalate. We are not involved in immigration enforcement. We do not wear masks. We identify ourselves and wear name tags, things like that. There seems to be an effort also on maybe a separate issue to differentiate.
Well, you're saying local law enforcement trying to make it clear that they're not engaged in these activities? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think, first off, local law enforcement typically doesn't have an immigration mission related to ICE. And especially in some of these communities, you know, some local communities don't want them involved in those activities. So local law enforcement is just trying to make it clear, hey, we're here to protect the public and maintain order. But that's really it. That's the extent of their involvement.
Mm-hmm. Sam, what do you think about the broader context here?
You know, I think that Arizona, in large part, you know, has been at the forefront of a lot of these conversations for decades. I mean, this is, you know, in many respects, perhaps activity and a world and a reality that Russell Pierce and Joe Arpaio were working towards in terms of the sense of fear that a national police force that can come in and scare immigrants away and work towards self-deportation or even violent, coming into restaurants and things like that in a violent way. I think it's important to note that the recent activity at the sports bars across the town, I think, netted somewhere in the neighborhood of 30 to 35 arrests. So, you know, all of this big, huge noise, all of this activity, all of this aggression, and, you know, it had netted a relatively small number of infractions that, to Matt's point, a local law enforcement agency could have conducted. Hmm. So I think, you know, a lot of this activity is deeply unnecessary nationally, but especially in the context of Arizona and our relationship with migration historically.
Yeah. So you're referencing kind of the era of 1070 there. Let me ask you about that, Matt. How do you think that sort of shadowed over all of this conversation in Arizona right now?
I think that, first off, SB 1070, like, I'm not sure how much people even remember that episode. I mean, that's, you know, 2010. We're talking 15 plus years ago at this point. What is striking to me is that during SB 1070, the state had this, like, or the nation had this, like, just the reaction to that law, which basically said, you know, local law enforcement, if they have reasonable suspicion as part of a legal stop, can ask somebody about their immigration status. And that caused just that enormous uproar. Mm-hmm. And just consider that in the light of what we see now, where ICE agents basically, you know, people getting, you know, nabbed off the street in some circumstances in Minnesota and elsewhere. It's remarkable to me.
That's interesting. So I want to ask about the political question involving the Chris Mays story, right? Calls for her resignation from Republican lawmakers. I think there was a resolution on the legislation floor. I mean, any chance you think that'll happen, Sam?
None at all. I don't think that there's any chance that Attorney General Mays will resign. I think that, you know, what it did do, and I really do applaud the governor for taking the opportunity to work to turn the temperature down, because I think that is necessary. I think, you know, to Matt's point, I think, you know, those comments, whether or not they were factually correct or not, likely shouldn't have come from the top law enforcement official in the state. But I think that we have a moment and we have an opportunity to really appeal to the better angels of our nature, both as a community and as a body of elected officials. And I think that is something that I think the quick response across the political spectrum will hopefully yield in the coming days and weeks.
What do you think, Matt? You think that'll happen?
No. probably not. I mean,
better angels in politics?
It's an election year. It's immigration.
I'm optimistic on the Friday morning.
How much does the election year part play into this, though, Matt?
Well, I mean, there's politics involved in everything. So, that's at the heart of this issue and every other issue that's going to be dealt with, you know, through November.
Yeah. Okay, let me pivot a little bit to talk about an interesting thing I think that's happening right now, which is related to this tangentially, which is that that in light of this shooting death in Minneapolis of Alex Preti, who was armed at the time, there's this conversation about guns at protests that is a little counterintuitive. We're seeing almost a reversal, as my colleague Wayne Shutsky reported today, with President Trump and some Republicans saying, you know, you should not bring a gun to a protest. State Democrats speaking out and sort of defending Second Amendment rights. What do you make of this, Matt?
There's hypocrisy abounds. I mean, look, the fact of the matter is your rights come from God and the Constitution. They don't come from people. And so, you know, I think in a state like Arizona, you have a right to carry, and you have that right whether you're at a protest or not. You have that right to carry. And that doesn't give you the right to interfere in lawful law enforcement activities and ICE or otherwise. But you have a right to carry.
Hmm. Sam, this does seem to be a reversal from, you know, the political conversation around what we saw like in 2020 when we had armed protesters from the right protesting election results or COVID mandates, things like that.
Yeah. I mean, I think that you know, outside of the immediate moment, right, I think that one of the things that has always driven American democracy is the opportunity to have difficult discussions around big topics. And, you know, the Second Amendment is one of the shortest in terms of the actual language on the page. And I think that opens up a lot to that interpretation. And I think it also opens up, that amendment in particular to a lot of zealous opposition and zealous support. So I think that you're seeing people point out what they might see as hypocrisy. If you're someone who has worked for and towards appropriate gun control and gun safety, to have a Republican president, a Republican Congress, and, you know, a Republican executive agency essentially trample on the Second Amendment, I think that was an exact quote from the National Rifle Association. I think that's just something to point out in the hypocrisy of what's happening right now around our deep and long history with the Second Amendment here in America.
Matt, let me start with you on this next story. We've been, I think, waiting in the political world here for some time to see what would happen next, if what candidate might come forward from the newly formed Arizona Independent Party, formerly the No Labels Party. And we got our answer this week. It is healthcare entrepreneur Hugh Lytle. He's called himself a citizen leader. What's your reaction here, Matt?
Well, I think it's interesting. Two things I'm watching. Is he going to put real money into the race? And does his party, I'll put that in air quotes, being the independent party, does that make him attractive to Arizona's independent voters who represent almost a third of the electorate? I mean, if so, this is somebody who may draw a significant, much more significant portion of the electorate than you would typically see from a third party candidate.
Right. This is not the same kind of third party candidate we might have seen in the past, Sam.
Yeah. I mean, I think structurally, because of the way that, he and to Matt's point, the in air quotes party has kind of approached access to the ballot this year, I think it will have, definitely unknown, but a significant effect on the potential general election candidate. But, I think we've always kind of flirted with independent ideas and third parties here in Arizona. And I think because the big game is coming up next weekend, I think it's a little bit like rooting for the Minnesota Vikings in the Super Bowl. I mean, they're not playing. They're not a serious contender. Right. And we have a system that really has been built on one choice between two. And, mm-hmm. and we have a long drawn out primary fight that the Republicans still have to go through right now. So I think that people are still learning the names of everybody that's in that race. So to have another person come in from the independent side of things, I think, is just adding confusion. And I think really makes an even stronger case for Governor Hobbs to win re-election.
Mm. So there, we should say, is a lawsuit, I think, from the Republican side and the Democratic side against the name change that the Arizona Independent Party put in place, so that they are called the Independent Party. They say it's confusing because most independent voters don't, I guess, are not, involved in an actual party. And as you mentioned, Matt, most independents in the state with a capital I, like, this is a third of the electorate. Are those people truly independent?
Yeah, I mean, to be clear, in Arizona, and we use that term independent sort of as a catch-all, but they're not independent. They are unaffiliated. Okay? And so there is a lot of – but it does create confusion that this guy might represent those voters or appeal to them when they are, in fact, not They're not independent. Look, here's the bottom line. He doesn't have to win 15, 20% of the vote to have a determinative impact on who wins the general election. If he gets 10% of the vote, that may be enough to, mm-hmm. to swing this thing left or right, because it is in all likelihood going to be a very close election, as it was when Governor Hobbs was elected, of course, the first time.
Yeah, we've seen so many of those close elections. So then the question is, who could be impacted more?
I mean, I believe that it would impact the Republican folks right now, because I think right now, you know, you're fighting right now to see who is more closely aligned with the MAGA world and President Trump in the primary. That whoever in that individual, whoever escapes that primary, is going to have to work very, very hard to run to the middle. Mm-hmm. And you're going to have this Hugh Lytle already there, and you're going to have Governor Hobbs running on 4 years of a track record there too. So I think it's going to hurt that individual who's trying to come to the middle, and that's my contention at the moment right now.
Matt, last word on this?
Yeah, I will disagree. I will point out that there are over 300,000 more registered Republicans than Democrats in this state, and it is Governor Hobbs who's going to have to do much more to pull independents and moderates her direction, and I think that's going to be a tall task. And so this guy – but really, I mean, let's be honest. It's going to depend on the kind of race and how he positions himself and whether he runs as more of a conservative-leaning or progressive-leaning candidate. We just mm-hmm. don't know the answer to that yet.
We can agree on that.
Yeah, we can agree on that. Right. The Arizona Republican Party has a new chair. Former chair, of course, Gina Swoboda, is leaving, running for Congress. And after a pretty contentious competition, a 12-hour-long meeting, I think it was, over the weekend, the state GOP selected Sergio Arellano. Matt, Gina Swoboda was successful in racking up a lot of wins for Trump in Arizona from electorates, I think, that people didn't expect. But not everyone in the party liked her. Tell us, what do you think this move to Arellano represents for the Arizona GOP?
I think it's just the party turning the page. I think Sergio, he's a party activist. He's a combat veteran. He has a long track record with the party. I think he was able to cobble together a coalition of, you know, the old party, like the McCain voters and the MAGA types and Trumpers, and like he was able to bring all that together, which is a big accomplishment in itself. But the biggest thing for me is what he said he wants to do as party chair, which is support candidates, raise money, register voters. Mm-hmm. And if they just do that, that's a victory. And just don't do anything else. Support Republican candidates, raise money, register voters. No controversy. That's it.
The anything else being controversy there. Okay. Sam, this is a guy who worked on Latino outreach for the 2024 campaign, right? Like for Trump. And that went pretty well. Like we saw Latino voters swing toward Trump in a way that not a lot of people expected. Do you think this is a good move for the GOP to kind of keep that as a priority at this point?
I definitely think that is, you know, something that should be a focus for everybody, especially in Arizona, because demographics are our destiny here, especially in politics. But I don't think that as we've seen, you know, this is Matt and I were chatting before we got on air, 30 years, maybe 35 years, that this is going to be the election that the Latino vote is going to, you know, be the deciding factor. Yeah. And I think that it's definitely an important fact, but I think that they're not a monolith, and no individual sector of our demographics is a monolith. And I think that it's important to always reflect the community that we have. And I think that Sergio does that from a Republican standpoint. But I think that it's not as much of a deciding factor as I think folks are going to want to make it.
Matt, do you think the Latino vote will stay with Trump heading forward, or with the GOP in general?
I think that they are going to be – I think the Latino vote is going to be most impacted by the economy. And if they feel like the economy is moving in a good direction, then they are likely to stick with, you know, Trump and Republicans and kind of continue down that road. And if they don't, if they feel like the economy is threatened, inflation is eating them alive, et cetera, then, you know, then that doesn't bode well for mm-hmm. the party in power being Republicans.
All right. Let me hit on an important story happening today before we let you both go. Governor Katie Hobbs in Washington talking to Interior Secretary Doug Burgum. This is all about Colorado River water. We are seeing the river shrink, less water going around to lots of people who still need it. all the states are trying to figure out who's going to have to take the most cuts, essentially. Sam, is this the only bipartisan issue left in the state, it seems like?
I don't think it's the only bipartisan issue, but I definitely think it's the most important of our moment right now. We're about 2 weeks away from a very, very important deadline on the Colorado River, and I think that Governor Hobbs' leadership in the water conversation for really bringing this meeting together, I think is incredibly important. And Arizona's role in the river is also something that Arizonans should not forget. I mean, from leafy greens to leading the way in the advanced manufacturing industries, we need that river to thrive and continue to build the economy of the future. And we have been responsible users of that river since the original compact. So I think that my hope is that this meeting that Secretary Burgum is leading will bring the upper basin to a level of realization that the water that Arizona needs is the water that America needs to thrive.
Matt, what do you think? Arizona's coming into this in not a great position, right?
Yeah, each of the lower basin states are in a difficult spot. It is notable to me the one governor from each of the basin states that's not attending, being Governor Newsom of California. And California being in probably the best shape water-wise out of all the states, they've had a very fortunate winter so far in terms of water. Their reservoirs are near capacity, and Arizona's certainly are not. I think that's unfortunate. Look, we are looking at a positively catastrophic spring runoff. Unless there is a huge turnaround in the remaining months of February, March, April in terms of snowfall across the Rockies, it is going to be horrendous, the worst runoff in our lifetimes.
Yeah.
So that does not bode well.
Okay. In the interest of not ending on a very hard note there, let's end on my favorite bill of the week. There's a proposed bill from Senator Frank Carroll at the state legislature that would impose fines on people for feeding pigeons. So let me ask you both before I let you go. What do you think? Are you anti-pigeon, pro-pigeon?
I'm very pro-pigeon. In particular, their use in spy activity. I think that the work that Winston Churchill did to leverage pigeons in counterintelligence work during World War II is incredible and worth your attention.
Man, what a point to bring up. What do you got, Matt?
I didn't know nearly that much about pigeons. I'm more agnostic about pigeons.
He's going to stay on the fence on this one. Good one. All right. That'll do it for the Friday Newscap. Matt Benson of Veritas, Sam Richard with Consilium Consulting. Thank you both.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the biggest stories of the week with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Lauren Gilger. Thanks for listening.